Opinions expressed on this podcast do not necessarily reflect those of the management of Louisville.am and Veritas New Media, a Louisville.am production.
Robbing and shooting and raping and killing, bloody murder more or less than running airplanes into buildings. Every time I turn around, something else is going wrong. Yeah, tell me, what the hell is going on?
Welcome to the Rusty Satellite Show with your host, Rick Reddy. The show airs every week exclusively here on the Louisville.am Podcast Network. Rick's ready to start ranting and raving about his hometown right now. So here's
okay,
Rick.
And this is the Rusty Satellite Show. A thank you for downloading this podcast and tuning in on the Louisville.am Network. First of all, while we're on thank yous, I want to give a big thank you to Diane Williamson, the one of the lovely voice that you just heard introducing me. Diane is a voice talent here in Louisville. She is best known to me, I guess, and many of you. She used to be in radio, but she got this great gig and is a full-time voice talent, and she does projects like her big project is she's the voice of OnStar. So, you know that voice that says, you are in a ditch. Help is on the way. That's Diane, and it's really fascinating, and hoping to have her as a guest on the show in the coming weeks. The guests we do have this week are very exciting. In the second half of the show, I'm going to have Marianne Zicker, and she is the Executive Director of Preservation Louisville. That organization is very active in the way our city looks and is involved in preserving properties. And, you know, she was able to dispel some of the myths that I carried around about the preservation movement. She says that group does not seek to stand in the way of development, but to preserve good things in our buildings. So we talked about Colonial Gardens, for one, and Whiskey Row, and some of the projects that have gotten publicity in recent years in Louisville, and the role that the Preservation Louisville organization has in those disputes. So she's a very interesting person, and it was a great interview, and that's coming up on the second half of the show. But first, we're going to talk with Brendan McCarthy, who is a transplant to this city. He has been here about a month. He is heading up the Louisville Public Media's Kentucky Center for Investigative Reporting, and it's a very interesting take on journalism in this town and all around. And Brendan is a very impressive young man. He's 31 years old. He's worked at major newspapers in Boston, Philadelphia, Chicago, and New Orleans. He's got a big job ahead of him. He's going to head up a really interesting concept in journalism over there at Louisville Public Media. So let's take a listen to my interview with Brendan. Brendan McCarthy is the new, what do you call your title, Brendan?
The business card says managing editor.
Managing editor. He's the king over there at the brand new Kentucky Center for Investigative Reporting. And it's a product of Louisville Public Media. And, you know, they're hiring some big shots over there as journalists and reporters. And it is really, Brendan, I'll let you tell me, first of all, about the mission that you've got going over there.
Certainly. Well, we are a nonprofit investigative newsroom. Essentially, we're going to do investigative journalism, accountability, watchdog stuff. That traditional outlets have you've seen less and less of this kind of reporting in recent years as folks cut back for a variety of reasons. And
certainly, our local newspaper is dropped the ball, so to speak, on investigative reporting. So, you know, in theory, it's a welcome addition to the journalism scene.
Well, you know, investigative reporting takes time. I'm a newspaper. My background's mostly in newspaper as well as a little bit in TV and a lot of it in investigative work. And it takes time and resources. And when you're an outlet battling so many things, like business issues and declining print, it's hard to say, well, we're going to spend a year or months to work on these projects.
Right, because you got to feed the beast, right? Every day it needs more. More food, right? In most cases.
To be fed, and that's across mediums, too.
Yeah.
I think and it also includes radio, TV. So they're, the folks over at LPM, Louisville Public Media, they run WFPK, WFPL, UOL. And they've been doing great work and really growing in recent years. Certainly, I think anyone in the area knows that just by the sheer new staff and numbers that they've been increasing. But they saw this huge void here in investigative public service journalism.
Okay. Well, I want to get back to that. But, Brendan, first I want to introduce you to our audience and tell us where you came from and some of these very high-profile jobs you've had in the past.
Yeah, I'm brand new to Louisville. Glad to be here. I'm still trying to figure out how to exactly say it because I know there's different variations. I'm going to go Louisville for now, and if I'm wrong, please, everyone, let me know.
Well, wait till you say it on the air in front of a bunch of people, and then you'll find out.
Certainly, my backstory. You know, I was born and raised in Southern Mass and in Rhode Island. I'm a Yankee, a New England guy. I dropped my R's a little bit, although I'm working on it. I popped around a little bit. Always just wanted to be a newspaper, be a journalist. Wherever that may be. Now, certainly it's a pretty wild climate now all over the map, but I got very lucky in college, had a lot of writing gigs. And
where did you go to college?
I went to a small school, Emerson College in Boston. Okay. It's a big film school and other stuff. I had a blast and got an internship, did some stringing work for the Boston Globe, real lucky. Started out as a clerk overnight there. Went to school full-time during the day. And then I parlayed that into some great internships and Philadelphia Inquirer, a bunch of stints, and then I landed at an internship at the Chicago Tribune right after college, and was incredibly blessed. I did some great work and got a staff job after that, and just totally, you know, loved it. Loved Chicago, and it was just great working, seeing the inner workings of a great American newspaper. And after a couple of years there, I had a great offer from this splendid, scrappy newspaper in New Orleans, the Times-Picayune, which was riding a high after some stellar work after Hurricane Katrina, and won some right. Pulitzer Prizes. And they said, come on down and come cover criminal justice in New Orleans, having never been to New Orleans. I said, why not? Why not, right? Who doesn't like an adventure?
And well, I was politics in New Orleans. There are some similarities to Kentucky, but
from Providence to Chicago to New Orleans, right? How about that?
What a resume! You know, everybody wants to go from Boston to Philadelphia to Chicago to New Orleans to Louisville, right? That's the chosen career path.
I guess. I tell you, and this opportunity came up, and what an adventure! I mean, I live and breathe news. I just eat this stuff up, and I truly feel that it's important what we do, you know, getting out there, digging, telling stories that aren't being told. And this is the best opportunity out there right now for journalists.
Okay, so let me ask you, you're here, you've been in Louisville about a month or so. I haven't seen your byline anywhere. I haven't seen any production out of you. When are we going to see something that comes out of the Kentucky Center for Investigative Reporting?
Rick, no pressure.
No pressure at all.
Well, certainly, look, it is a startup, and we have some stuff, some things to work out. But we've hired one gentleman who I arguably is one of the best investigative reporters in the state. His name's Ralph, but you probably know him as R.G. Dunlop. He's been an investigative reporter for about 30 years or so over at the Courier-Journal, ran their investigations, was a city editor at one point, and did some just stellar work, Pill Mills, things like that, won a lot of awards.
Right.
And he left the paper last year.
Let me interrupt you and have an opportunity to present here on the Rusty Satellite Show the first scoop of all time in our in our six episode existence. You just made another hire, and we're talking on Tuesday. This podcast comes out on Thursday, but on Wednesday you announced.
Right, on Wednesday we'll be announcing the hire of a super talented, very versatile journalist, and his name's Mark Shaver. He's currently the editor of the breaking news team at the Courier Journal. And what he's going to do is something incredibly important here at the Kentucky Center, and that's data journalism. I know folks are probably saying, data what? Well, this data journalism is a mix of – it's a newfangled word, but it's a mix of old-school computer-assisted reporting. I'm talking databases, mapping. And it combines those very vital skills and important tools with this kind of newish media stuff, and I'm talking – news applications. You know, you can go online and click on very interactive type stuff. And what his whole task, and I told Mark, you know, your goal is to work with us and tell super important stories and super compelling ways. He's going to be out there digging, mining, scraping public records and documents and helping us tell stories, not just in print, not just on radio, but on the web, and help make it user-friendly for folks to click and read and learn more about.
Okay, great. Well, it sounds like you're going to be have an opportunity to produce a lot of journalism. Now, where is our audience going to see this journalism?
Well, right now we're building this foundation, and we're still hiring. We're going to be picking up two additional reporters, so we'll have a team of about five folks, within a few months. And I anticipate later this year we'll have our first few projects out. Now, the question of where will it be, and not to be coy, but truly, I think it'll be everywhere. Well, I'm working right now in partnerships with media partners across the state, and how I view us, our role is we're nonprofit, we're public media. And we're out to do the biggest, most important damn stories that are available. We have this great newsroom, super talented folks just across the hallway at FPL. They're doing great work now. We're going to work with them to help bring out some larger investigative stuff on their beats. And then we'll also be carving out our own niche across the state. Now, certainly we're Louisville-centric, right? You, me, we're here in Louisville right now. But we're also going to be tackling a lot of big state issues. And again, to go back to that huge void, I think, that exists here in the statewide media realm, stories that affect everyone. There's a little bit of I'd call them media deserts in eastern Kentucky and western Kentucky. Folks there don't really know who's stealing from them or what their officials are doing or what the issues are.
Sure. Well, let me interject. And it used to be that the Courier-Journal had bureaus all around the state, and they delivered the newspaper to all around the state. It leads me into what I want to ask you. You're only in this market for a month, but in our conversation, I know you've been studying the media. What's your overall impression of how well our media operations are doing in Louisville?
Yeah, that's hard to say just because, if I could, I'd love to have a decade-long look at the local media scene. These are changing times, though, and as much as we're talking about Louisville now, I don't think it's much different in other cities. I'm coming from New Orleans, where that paper I talked about, one of the nation's best pound-for-pound metro papers, decided not to print every day. That's the Times-Picayune. They don't print every day anymore. A newspaper. When this happened about a year ago, folks were outraged. What do you mean I don't get a piece of a dead tree delivered with ink by a guy in a truck on my doorstep every morning? These are things that are happening everywhere.
Right.
And I think most journalists everywhere will tell you, yes, there's writing on the wall. You know, people are picking up iPads and reading it on different platforms and hearing it on radio. And I don't think there's one cure-all solution out there. And I think that's why where we come in. Again, this our strict goal is to do this public service, hard-hitting, impactful, investigative
right
journalism. And when hopefully you'll, as I work on these partnerships, hopefully you'll see it in print. I can tell you for sure you're going to see it on the web and on the radio at WFPL. And I think you might even see it on TV. You give us a little bit of time to get rolling, but I'm very optimistic.
Sure. Well, time for a bit of skepticism. And certainly it's must be great to work in an environment where you're a nonprofit. There's no pressure to worry about what advertisers are going to say, et cetera. But you are being funded by a foundation, or not really a foundation, but two giant donors stepped up, and in Ed Hart and the Jones family here in Louisville, who want to see better journalism. And how do you answer the critics who say, you're just beholden to them and the donors, the people that pay for your existence, pay your salary, are going to hold you to the fire, tell you what stories to read.
Mm-hmm. Well, I can tell you right now, certainly I haven't talked to these donors. I don't know what their ideas are. I'm telling you how we're going to run our newsroom of the highest ethical standards. And we're going to have a lot of, certain benchmarks that we meet. We're going to have every person who donates a dollar to the center will be listed on our website. Our tax forms are going to be available. We're going to be available for questions. I mean, this is full-on transparency, and the same thing we expect from others in the open government that we're going to call into question. Look, these funds, these donors have donated a nice nest egg, a nice start for us. And my goal is to also diversify the funding in coming years. And And you tell me what media outlet, any company, what media, who donates to these other private media companies? I mean,
I might mention that the Rusty Satellite Show is taking donations. We haven't gotten any yet, but I'm sure that's going to happen soon.
Yeah, we're a nonprofit. our stuff is as transparent as can be. We're going to meet the highest ethical standards. And truly, if folks have questions, please email us. It's going to be spelled out on our website. We are going to operate without fear nor favor. I mean, this stuff, and you'll see it in our reporting. We're out there to get to the bottom, to tell these truths, to hold folks accountable across the state. And anyone who supports that is always okay with me.
Well, sounds great. It certainly makes sense. Let's lighten up a little bit. Brendan, I've just met you. You're 31. You're living in the Highlands. What's going to be the fun thing to do socially in Louisville?
I don't know. If anyone knows, though, please email me, bmccarthy at louisvillepublicmedia.org. I'd love to know. Truly, I'm up all night working on these things, like grants and doing a lot of research, and I'm totally new to town. I don't have any kids or whatever. I have a little apartment. I'm trying to figure things out myself. I welcome
any party at Brendan's place later on. And lastly, before I let you go, I'm watching the newsroom. Are you? How is that different from real life?
I haven't figured out how to get cable yet, or I'm kind of lax on the TV situation. And I did see a good bit of the first season, and the newsroom's not very. I've been in many TV newsrooms, and it is quite amazing to see how they operate, because it has nothing to do with real life. I tell you what, though, I'm a total news junkie, and I own, I think, almost every journalism TV and journalism movie, from All the President's Men, His Girl Friday, and things like that.
Okay, what's your favorite?
All the President's Men is just so damn good. But I tell you, the paper's pretty fun.
Yeah,
To be really a little Debbie Downer, though, and it's not a happy movie, but I thought also Shattered Glass was a really solid journalism movie, and that was about Stephen Glass, the fabricator, the fabulous there with the New Republic. That was a good one, too.
Okay, well, some good advice, so we have to wrap it up here. Brendan, I really appreciate you coming by the studio and spending a few minutes with us here on the Rusty Satellite Show.
Learn about the movers and shakers in the Louisville business scene with Startup, Conversations with Louisville Entrepreneurs. A new episode every Tuesday at louisville.am.
Okay, and thank you very much, Brendan McCarthy, for coming by the studios here at louisville.am and talking to us about the new Kentucky Center for Investigative Reporting. We are experiencing some very interesting times in journalism here in the River City. I tell you, I wrote a piece on Insider Louisville this week. You can look that up at insiderlouisville.com about the changes at the Courier-Journal, which are not good. The decline and fall of the newspaper in town I've chronicled for years. But now, this current story has two components. Number one, a lot of reporters are walking out the door or being asked to leave. One that has not been publicized, the incredible Inman, David Inman, has been asked to leave the Courier-Journal after 32 years. In addition, the story talks about four reporters that have left for better jobs in PR, government, or journalism. So there's a lot of changes afoot in local journalism. Another move that is being made, I just learned yesterday that Bill Lamb over at WDRB-TV is hiring three journalists to work exclusively on the WDRB website, which is experienced a giant jump in viewers and traffic, thanks in part to the 2012 hiring of Rick Bozich and Eric Crawford from the Courier-Journal. So the place that, the tradition is, if you grew up in this town, the Courier was the number one thing and everybody else was behind it. It was the paper of record. It's where all the important stuff was. And that's just not the case anymore. I think we're going to see a lot more news from WFPL and WDRB in terms of quality journalism and good investigative reporting. So we'll see how that turns out here in Louisville. I'll be chronicling that primarily on Insider Louisville. So speaking of Bill Lamb, there's an effort going on in Kentucky, and it's really something that's kind of embarrassing to those of us in Kentucky, and that is there is a movement afoot to upgrade the science teaching in our high schools in our state, and
And, of course, there's opposition to this, and of course, it's on religious grounds. The religious right is calling these new science standards, which teach evolution, which prepare our young people for the world outside of Kentucky, and these critics call these new standards atheist and fascist, if you can believe that. We're trying to teach science here, ladies and gentlemen. These people are the global warming deniers. And it's just upsetting to me that these standards that have been passed in like 25 states are being held up in Kentucky. There's been hearings on it. Kentucky's being made a laughingstock for balking at adopting these new science standards in schools. It's really an amazing thing. I'm going to read one paragraph from Bill Lamb's point of view where he addressed this issue, and he said basically exactly. These aren't the dark ages, and science isn't some newfangled fad. Kentucky can no longer afford to be viewed as a backwater of uneducated hillbillies and snake handlers, and these new standards deceive the support of everyone who cares about our future. I certainly agree with Bill's sentiments on that, and couldn't have written it better. It is a big embarrassment to the state to have resistance to these new standards. So, now, speaking of embarrassment, the city is abuzz. People that are paying attention are really upset. I'm outraged at our Metro Council. And in an embarrassing move, at taxpayer expense, the Metro Council conducted a trial in which the Metro Council members were the jurors and basically found that Councilwoman Barbara Shanklin violated the ethics requirements. Shanklin did a variety of things that wasted taxpayer money on personal projects. She was found to have paid members of her family or relatives or friends. There were stories that she paid electric bills for people that were really in trouble. That she paid for grass mowing that was already paid for elsewhere. And basically, the entire trial. It considered a bunch of shouting matches, and it concluded on Wednesday, and very late Wednesday night, the council voted, and seven council members voted to retain her. They said that even though she did something stupid and that she broke the ethics laws, that wasn't grounds for removal. In fact, Brent Ackerson, one of the members of the council who voted to retain Shanklin, so she gets to stay on the Metro Council, despite the fact that she was found in a court to have committed these clear ethics violations, it's just mind-boggling to me. Brent Ackerson released a statement afterward in which one line says, "Stupidity, ignorance of procedures, misguided intentions, these are the basis for a finding of willful neglect and misconduct." But he says, does stupidity, ignorance of procedures, or misguided intention rise to the level of removing an elected official from office? He says no. I say yes. You know, I don't want people who are stupid and who don't know the laws and whose defense for committing a crime is I didn't know the rules, or I didn't think of this, or I was just trying to help my people. And it's really an embarrassment. And I'm sorry to say that a lot of this is either the vote on the council, is really divided by it's divided by racial and income, racial lines and income. All the African-American members of the Metro Council voted to retain Ms. Shanklin. Most of those, and even the white members who voted to retain her, are represent poor areas. You know, I was really disappointed in Mr. Ackerson, who represents St. Matthews, but also Dan Johnson, who, has never been the brightest light on the council. He voted with Shanklin, and they were all Democrats that voted for her. So you can think what you will, but the Metro Council has really embarrassed itself. I can't imagine. I think there may also be a double standard. I can't imagine another somebody like Jim King being accused of these kinds of acts and being allowed to go through a trial. A taxpayer-funded trial, and be convicted, be found guilty
of ethics violations, of serious ethics violations, and still a jury of your peers votes to keep you in office. It sets a poor precedent for our city, and I just hope some of the voters will hold these people accountable for their votes. It's just quite an embarrassment. But anyway, on to a brighter subject. This week in sports was a big week for Teddy Bridgewater. If you're not already on the Teddy Bridgewater bandwagon, you should be. Teddy did a round of interviews at ESPN and went to the media days for the New American Conference. And Teddy conducted himself with class, dressed well. He spoke well. You know, I don't know if you remember last spring, he had some work done on his teeth. He really looks good. He is the ideal Heisman Trophy candidate, and he brings quite a contrast to Johnny Football from Texas A&M, Johnny Manziel, who's making headlines these days for getting caught up at frat parties and staying out of jail and having a big story written in I believe Sports Illustrated about his behavior off the field. So you know, it's really great that the University of Louisville is now seen as the place where athletes don't get into trouble and they get good grades and they win games and do all these things. So you know, it's really a perfect setup for Teddy to really have a true Heisman Trophy kind of year. The schedule is favorable to that. Louisville is likely to win most, if not all, of its games, and Bridgewater is the star of the team, and he's getting national attention, and it really makes you look forward to the football season. And so I'm sure that tickets to the football games, that, you know, this season the opposition is not what it will be next year when Louisville joins the Atlantic Coast Conference, but it's going to be a great season at Papa John's Cardinal Stadium, and we'll look forward to all the national attention that the football team is going to bring to our city. All right, well, that's sort of my take on a few things that are going on this week in Louisville. My next interview is with Marianne Zicker, who is the executive director of Preservation Louisville, and I found her to be a really interesting interview subject. She has an important responsibility in terms of how our city is, our city looks, the buildings the way the city is developed and the way the buildings are taken care of and which ones are torn down and which ones aren't. So here's my interview with Marianne Zicker.
Put up a parking lot with a pink hotel, a boutique, and a swinging hot.
Welcome to the show, Marianne.
Thank you.
Now, I understand as part of your job, you make sure that things do not happen in development here in Louisville, right?
You know, that's one way of looking at it. I like to look at it as we like to have thoughtful evolution in our smart growth in the city.
Okay, well, that's another way of putting it. I know the critics, you know, there are a lot of developers in town that have big projects, and one of the big hurdles seems to be getting past the preservation people, right? But I was kidding. I know you do some important things in preserve. How do you describe your mission?
Saving the places that matter.
Okay.
You know, we like to get out there and protect and promote things, not only from an architectural standpoint, but from a cultural and environmental standpoint also. And I think a lot of people sometimes think that we are trying to stand in the way of every single demolition that happens in this city. And unfortunately, there's only one of me and way too many demolitions that happen on a daily basis. So that's not really what we're talking about. We're trying to be thoughtful about how we move forward and how we grow.
Right. And we should, you know, obviously we should preserve parts of our past. And if it stands in the way of like a big, exciting new project, sometimes I can understand why people would oppose you. And a lot of your issues with development groups they're very public, right?
Absolutely.
And I'll know one because I grew up in the South End and near Colonial Gardens, and that's one of the big projects that got your organization in the news in the last year or so. Tell me where we are with Colonial Gardens.
You know, we're actually in a really exciting place. It was few years ago, actually, when the Iroquois Neighborhood Association came to us and they were interested in talking about what new development was going to come into the Colonial Gardens parcel. And what we wanted to do was help the neighborhood. And I figured the neighborhood, since they came to us, they were looking for a way to be at the table so that they could talk about what was going to happen with, you know, a piece of property that's near where they live because they care about it. So landmarking and going through that process was the decision they wanted to do. We supported them in that. And it has been quite some time since the building's been landmarked. And we have been consistently trying to work and hope for someone to come forward and really want to develop this space in a way that's going to be great for the entire neighborhood. And I think, fingers crossed, that is where we are right now. The city has made some real strides, and it's going to be a great new development, hopefully.
If I'm correct, didn't the city take it over or buy it and now are trying to market it to developers?
Yes, that is the most recent development. The city bought rights to sell the building, and that was one of the major hurdles that we were having. There were people that were interested, and we weren't able to get past that hurdle. So now that the city took control, we have the ability to really make something happen, and there is a very interested party that has done other things very successfully here in the city that's seriously looking at it, and we are definitely ready to see new development there. The people in the neighborhood are ready for it. It's going to be a great, wonderful reflection of what's happening across the street at the Iroquois Amphitheater.
And you're not going to tell me what it is?
You know, I can't really,
but we could have a scoop here, right here on the Rusty Satellite Show.
I will say it's going to be an exclusive when it happens.
Okay. Well, I'll expect you'll tell us here first. Now, part of what you do with Preservation Louisville, I know, is you take buildings, and a lot of the debate, and I've been on both sides of some of the debates, some of the buildings you try to preserve seem like not worth preserving. Who makes the determination? How do you just determine when a building should get landmarked? And landmarked, just for our listeners, means that, I guess, that if a building is landmarked, there's a whole other layer of approvals that have to go through to be demolished. Correct me on all the stuff that I'm getting wrong here.
Basically, if something is landmarked or if you live in a preservation district, there is going to be an extra layer of conversation that happens if you want to do an addition or any sort of demolition around that property. There's another level of conversation that has to happen before you move forward. And what's interesting is that some of the buildings that you might think of, why exactly is this being landmarked? It's a lot of times maybe because of something that is possibly going to want to come into the neighborhood that the neighborhood itself isn't necessarily interested in, like
they're
a dollar store entrance.
They're just keeping another business out. Now it just comes to mind the building on Brownsboro Road used to be Azalea's Restaurant. Now, now was that landmarked? Because I know it's been demolished now.
Yes.
How did that get passed through, and
well,
how did they
kind of one of
it?
The examples of what I just mentioned when a group of people, neighborhoods surrounding the Bowers Azaleas building, didn't want to see a development kind of strip mall-esque come into that space. They went forward with trying to landmark the property, and it did become landmarked. Now a new developer has come in and really wanted to work more with the neighborhood to make sure that they end up with a product that everyone's going to be happy with, so they are moving forward with a new development. But the community has to have a tool in order to get to the table to talk about what's going to happen around them. It affects their property value as much as everyone else. So it was interesting that again, was a great example of how a neighborhood used that tool in the toolbox to really move forward and be a part of the conversation.
Okay. Now your organization, you just told me you have an annual, you do top 10 lists.
You know,
I wish we had that music from the Letterman show to go to that. Tell me about your two top 10 list and maybe one or two examples of the first one, I guess, is the top 10 endangered properties list. How do you get on that?
The endangered historic places list. That's something that's been going on for over three decades here in the city of Louisville. We took it over in 2008 and every year have tried to curate the information on there just to highlight different areas where we need a little work.
Okay.
One of my favorite things on there?
Sure.
Shotgun houses.
Oh, yeah.
Shotgun houses and vacant and abandoned properties. They go together hand in hand, and I definitely think it's something that we need as a city to put on the agenda. We need to start looking at that, and I think shotgun houses are endangered, and they're one of our biggest assets. We have the largest amount of shotgun houses in the country, so it's kind of our responsibility to appreciate that and to really do something with that.
But there's so many of them. Is it really necessary to keep them all? I mean, I know a lot of them are in rundown neighborhoods, and they don't all look that great. Why can't we just knock out a bunch of them and leave a handful over here for preservation?
Well, because we want to, first of all, keep that top spot. It also gives a big answer to the tiny house movement, which is something that's going on where we've got a big amount of baby boomers. They're getting ready to downsize. We've got lots of people that like me, we're newlyweds. We want to buy a house. We want something small that we can live with before we get into a bunch of kids. You know, there's definite genres of people out there that need these tiny, small spaces. And that's where I feel like our community as a whole is moving towards. So when we look at shotgun houses, that's going to be a big answer to that. And of course, like I said, we want to be the city with the most of these. We're number one.
Okay. Well, it's good to be number one. Speaking of number one, there's another top 10 list.
Yes.
And it's a doozy, right? It's a good one. Is it successes? Is
yes.
that what it is? So what's number one on the top 10 successes list?
This year, number one on our successes list was the Big Four Bridge. That was something that people didn't necessarily think would be on our top 10 list. But it's not just about buildings. It's mm-hmm. about lots of things. And right now, the Big Four Bridge and the readaptation of how we use that bridge is a great achievement and a great success. So that was number one on the list. And we had our press conference there in May to celebrate.
Well, good. Yeah, well, I'm very impressed with that. Use it several times. Every time I go up there, there's plenty of people on there. It is something I think that we can really hang our hat on and say we're proud of. So
it's a bridge we're proud of.
There you go. As opposed to, and we won't get into that. But anyway, so Preservation Louisville, you have you're a nonprofit organization, and who funds you?
Well, people just like you, people okay. that want to be members.
Donations.
We have a very, very strong group of people here locally that are members of our organization, and we really appreciate the support of a lot of people out there. There's many people that lots of us hear about, and there's lots of great organizations that are doing good work and support us, like Brown-Forman, for instance.
Okay, so corporate support, donations from individuals. Mm-hmm. And so what's your biggest project you got going right now?
Right now, we are working on our 2013 photo competition. We are doing a competition that is in collaboration with the Photo Biennial that's happening in October. Okay. And right now we are asking all photographers, young, old, amateur, or professional, to get out there and take pictures of our top 10 successes for this year. And we've got cash prizes. We're going to have an exhibit. It's going to wow. be good times.
How much can I win?
You can win up to $500, Rick.
Wow. I'll get right at, I'll get, I'm gonna
Are
get
you a photographer?
Right after. Yeah, I got
okay.
my iPhone right
here. You
got
here. Your iPhone, so let's go.
What is so? Where can people find all this information? I'll give you a chance to plug it.
Awesome. Well, I want people to go to preservationlouisville.org. I want them to not only find information there about our preservation maintenance workshops, there are tax credit workshops to help you pay for that maintenance. There's also information about the photo competition or okay. the shotgun houses. We talked about those. Okay. Our Save Our Shotguns program. We just did it this June, and people need to get there and understand more about it.
So where do you suggest I go? You must have a favorite or one that you like. Where am I going to go to take my great photo?
Your great photo?
Which of those 10?
I personally think the bridge might be my favorite. It's very
bridge.
Scenic. I'm thinking we're going to get lots of pretty pictures of the Big Four
yeah,
Bridge.
Yeah, I think everybody's going to do that. I'm more of yeah. a guy that likes to get the thing that other people don't think of. So tell me which one on the list is for me.
Another one that I think is pretty cool is actually the Shawnee branch of the Louisville Free Public Library.
Okay.
They did a really nice addition, a brand new modern addition with all types of technology, added it on to the back of their historic building. Really, really cool architecture.
Okay. Okay. Well, I might
get
down
to the West End.
There you go.
All right.
There you go. Well, Mariana, it's been a pleasure. You by the way, have a great voice. And you were telling me you have voice training in
classically trained opera singer.
And started right here in.
Yes, at the Youth Performing Arts School.
That concludes this week's episode of the Rusty Satellite Show. I invite you to come back. We have a new episode every Thursday. We'll have some great guests, and we'll keep you up to date on some important things that are going on in my hometown, Louisville, Kentucky.
You can let Rick know what you think by sending an email to rick@louisvilleky.com. He's on Twitter, too, @RickyRedding. For more information about the show, including photos of Rusty Satellite Show guests, go to louisvilleky.com.